Welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists and opinion makers that bridge our two worlds. My name's Chad O'Carroll and I'll be your host today. This episode of Korean Context has a distinctly British flavour, featuring interviews with two ambassadors that work closely on British and Korean issues. While recently in London, I had the opportunity to speak to South Korean Ambassador Chu Kyu-ho to find out about his life as a diplomat in the United Kingdom and learn about what kind of issues he and his team were currently working on. And back here in Washington, D.C., we got the opportunity to talk to the United Kingdom's Ambassador to North Korea, Miss Karen Wolstenholme. Through my conversation with her, I found out about the UK's objectives in North Korea, life in Pyongyang, and how the death of Kim Jong-il had been affecting North Korea's leadership transition. With Korean Context unable to bring recording equipment into the British Embassy for security reasons, I met with Miss Wolstenholme at a local restaurant and started by asking her about what motivated her to select North Korea as a country she would want to work in.
I joined the Foreign Service over 30 years ago, and to be honest, when I joined the diplomatic service, it was to see parts of the world that I wouldn't otherwise see, and I find it much more challenging to be in the more difficult posts than the civilised ones, and I don't think you get much more challenging than North Korea.
Okay, and I understand you worked in Moscow when it was the Soviet Union, and Harare as well. How does North Korea compare to these kind of countries?
You're right, I worked in Moscow in 1984 and 1985 when it was certainly part of the Soviet Union. And in fact, North Korea now is quite similar to the Soviet Union then, in my view. There's limited access to officials. We have to apply for permission to travel outside Pyongyang. There are a lot of similarities, but of course that was the way Moscow was then, not the way Moscow is now. In relation to Harare, well, I worked there in 1986 until 1989, and I wouldn't say there are that many similarities apart from the fact that it was a developing country, and of course North Korea is also developing, so there are the challenges of operating in a developing country, but very different challenges from those underneath the communist regime as they were in Moscow.
What are some of the sort of objectives you'd like to achieve during your posting in Pyongyang?
Well, the main reason for us having an embassy in Pyongyang is to be as a channel of communication, direct communication between us and the authorities. So obviously I'd like to improve dialogue between us, particularly on the difficult issues such as denuclearization and human rights. It's much easier to speak on those issues one-to-one, face-to-face, than it is to do it if you haven't got a direct channel of communication. I think I would also like to increase the number of exchanges that we have. We have some North Koreans in the UK, and I think trying to expose North Koreans to the fact that the UK and the West more generally is not a threat is something I'd very much like to do more of. We have, of course, a very good opportunity this year with the Olympics to try and increase awareness of sport building bridges. So we certainly want to do a lot more in relation to sport. Last year, or the year before now, we managed to get permission to show Bend It with Beckham on North Korean television. And this was very well received. So we'd like to do much more in relation to sport.
Okay, so what's it like being in Pyongyang? Like, what do you do in your free time, weekend and so on?
I've only been there a short time, so it's probably not representative. And of course, since the death of Kim Jong-il, we've virtually worked full time, so I haven't had an awful lot of free time. We do try to get out and go to the markets and see what's going on in the city. Get out of the city if we possibly can. My very first weekend in Pyongyang, we went up to Mount Myohyang and climbed up the hill there, which was beautiful, really lovely. But what I'm going to do with my free time, if I ever get any, over the next few months, I'm not quite sure yet.
Okay. And you know, how blunt can you be with your North Korean colleagues about some of these things? You were alluding to
difficulties in getting contact with government officials back in Harare a few moments ago. What's it like in North Korea in comparison? Do you have a regular contact with government officials there? Or?
Not regular, but we certainly can request meetings with government officials, and mostly they are granted, so we can have access when we want. I'm certainly one for straight talking. I believe that actually, to be quite blunt about the message you're trying to give is the best way to get it understood. But of course, you have to find a balance, because if you're not able to be diplomatic about it, then your lines of communication will be cut off, and then there wouldn't be an awful lot of point in me trying to do a job there. So it's finding that balance between getting the message across, but also giving them the space to respond in the way they want to.
Yeah, and I mean, are there any issues that are sort of off limits for you to talk about, or you can talk about?
I can raise anything I want, but whether or not they will respond to the questions I ask is another issue. But certainly, I would not be shy about raising the issues that are of major concern to us, and particularly denuclearisation and human rights.
And just on denuclearisation, what role do you see Britain playing in this process? I mean, Britain's not part of the six-party talks. The EU's had a quite minor role. How do you think Britain can add to aiding the denuclearisation process?
I think we have a very important support role. Just being there and demonstrating that we support the process of the six-party talks is very important, just to show that there are other people who are interested in this, even if they are not actually at the table. So that's, I think, the role that we play there.
I mean, Britain, fought in the Korean War against North Korea, with South Korea, USA, France is another country. You know, Britain decided to set up an embassy in Pyongyang, I think it was 2000, 2001. How useful has the embassy been in forwarding British interests? And would you recommend it to other countries that don't have one?
I think it really depends upon what your objectives are, but for us, the main reason, as I said, was to open a channel of communication. And certainly from that perspective, I don't think you can better having an embassy on the ground. But of course, you have to weigh up all the issues about whether or not it suits your immediate objectives. I think for the UK, it certainly has met our objectives, but I can understand why others may not want to be in that position as yet. But for us, we couldn't have done the kind of programme work that we've done. We couldn't have given the difficult messages if we hadn't been there. And so, yes, I think it has been beneficial.
And on the flip side, what do you know about North Korea's intentions of having an embassy in the UK? Obviously, there aren't many of their nationals in the United Kingdom. There's not a very strong cultural presence in North Korea there, nor is there much trade. Do you know what sort of motivation for them to set up an embassy there was? Or?
Well, I think it was probably the same as our motivation, a direct channel of communication. But if I remember correctly, the DPRK embassy in London is also accredited. The ambassador there is accredited to other countries, I think Belgium and maybe some other European ones. So slightly different from us, they have a wider remit. But I think it's fairly usual, if you have diplomatic relations, for there to be an embassy in both countries. And don't forget, we have very few British nationals resident in DPRK either. So the situation is pretty similar between us, I think.
That's a good point. And in terms of the work you do from a consular perspective, what are the kind of issues that arise most frequently for British visitors in North Korea?
Well, I hesitate to say this, but we haven't had a consular case for several years, so we now will probably have a consular case. We obviously have staff who are trained to respond to any consular issue that's necessary. But we have very few British visitors. Most of those come on organised tours as well. So we don't have the same experiences that that other embassies do with any consular issues. But hopefully they won't happen. But if they do, then I hope we'll be prepared to handle them.
So you were recently quoted saying that and this was in the Korean press, that since the death of Kim Jong-il, North Korea's being managed under a collective leadership. How long do you think this system's going to prevail for?
I think the quote that you're talking about, I also raised a number of questions. I said that the key issue is how long is Kim Jong-un going to need a collective leadership? How long will he rely on them? How long will the collective leadership think he needs them? So I think it's a question of questions at the moment rather than answers. Some people have mentioned that collective leadership is not a term that North Koreans really understand. And I think they're collective leadership in that they're a group of advisors who are advising Kim Jong-un. But how long they will need, he will need their advice for, I think, is going to be very interesting to watch. How quickly is he able to assert his authority really emphatically? And that will be the answer to the question. It's not really a question I can answer yet.
Just living in Pyongyang, have you seen many signs of the Kim Jong-un propaganda campaign, you know, to try and build up that support that we've just been talking about? For example, posters going up or other forms of propaganda, TV, things like that.
No, we haven't really seen any signs, no slogans and portraits or specific propaganda going up relating to Kim Jong-un. But I think from the media coverage, the KCNA coverage, it's clear that there is a campaign to demonstrate that he's the leader, he's in charge. He's done a number of visits already since the end of the official mourning period. And I think it is obviously all a way of making him demonstrate what his capabilities are. So yes, I think they're doing quite a good job of making sure that he looks as though he's the confident young man that he certainly appears to be.
And I saw in one of these reports that quoted you that you said that you'd been surprised at how good the electricity supply had been over the period when Kim Jong-un died and how it deteriorated since. Did you feel that things got back to normal relatively quickly in North Korea, aside from what was being broadcast, the funeral and so on?
Yes, I think that the mourning period, there was very good electricity. There was a very good, well, obviously all the markets and the restaurants and everything was closed. But I think in the beginning of January, what we would call normal in Pyongyang was achieved pretty rapidly. And certainly the electricity supply is fairly erratic at the moment, but we would expect that probably under normal circumstances anyway.
And have you seen any major signs of preparation for the 2012 celebrations in April yet? Are there any indicators that this is going to be a big event?
We haven't seen any indications about what the celebrations will be, but for example, the construction work at Mansudae is still carrying on, and they're very busy doing that.
So yeah, well, thank you very much for joining us today, Heron.
Thank you.
And I wish you the best for your travels back to Pyongyang.
Thank you very much.
Back in London, I started my conversation with Ambassador Chu by asking him whether South Korean embassies took any different approach when working in a country with a simultaneous North Korean diplomatic presence, like in the United Kingdom.
I don't think there is fundamental difference,
right,
in our diplomatic activities in the countries where we have, North Korea has diplomatic relations,
mm-hmm,
or where the North Koreans don't. There's no substantial difference. I'd rather like to encourage my North Korean opposite number to actively engage with the government and mm-hmm, the people he or she is accrediting.
Yes.
I sense the activity is a little bit too rigid and too, how can I describe, too routine. Mm-hmm. In a sense, lukewarm, if
yeah,
I may.
And do you ever meet your opposite number in any of the business, or is it contact?
Yes, in some of the receptions, hosted by my British friends and authorities. I met him several times.
Now, as you know as well, the United Kingdom has an embassy in North Korea.
Right.
Do you think that's proving constructive for British DPRK ties? And is it also adding to the constructiveness of British ROK ties as well?
As you know, the UK government established diplomatic relations with North Korea just 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the British initiative in establishing diplomatic relations with DPRK. Goes, as far as I know, British intention was to engage North Korea in a more constructive manner. So I highly appreciate the initiative on the part of British government. But on the other hand, looking back upon the last 10 years, many British authorities, many British people say that the diplomats over there have met with difficulties in pursuing their objectives over there. So I hope in the years ahead, British diplomats can have more easy access to the people and more frequent discussions on matters of mutual interest with North Korea. So it was marvelous too.
Okay. Now, do you think there's a role for European countries in resolving the DPRK nuclear crisis that's continuing?
Yes, of course. European initiative will be welcomed, and South Korea, together with certain countries like the United States, Japan, China, and Russia, are conducting a very active diplomacy for denuclearizing North Korea, as you know, where we are conducting six-party talks. But our approach is, while we pursue negotiated settlement through dialogue, sometimes we need to apply sanctions when necessary. So this kind of two-track approach might get results in the end, I hope. And in the process, European integration or European involvement is very important for us.
So, can you talk us through some of the initiatives the ROK embassy is involved in? Maybe tell us about some of your strategic objectives as ambassador while you're here in London.
Mm-hmm. The United Kingdom is a very important diplomatic partner, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
UK is a permanent member states of the United Nations Security Council. The UK is United States ally. South Korea is, of course, an ally of the United States. So the UK is an ally's ally. It's a very important partner in terms of security affairs, in terms of international politics. I'm satisfied with the level of cooperation between these two governments. And when it comes to economic affairs, trade and investment, I'm also satisfied. As you might know, the Korea-EU Free Trade Agreement entered into force from the 1st of July this year. In the ratification process, I'm very satisfied with the cooperation given by high-level politicians in the UK to convince their counterparts in certain European countries to approve the free trade agreement.
Now, as a representative of South Korea in the United Kingdom, have you been involved in any discussions or negotiations regarding the sort of Eurozone crisis that's ongoing at the moment?
I haven't been given the opportunity to talk about Eurozone crisis officially. Rather, I took part in the discussion like discussion on emerging economies at the party conference. So sometimes I touch upon the Eurozone crisis, but not in a very substantial manner.
Yes. And is South Korea worried about it at all? You know, is it impacting trade, for example?
Of course, we are watching and monitoring the process unfolding right now, because we are living in a very closely connected world than never before. So we are very closely watching the process. And we haven't felt the quite negative impact of Eurozone crisis as yet. But our figure shows, that our trade figure shows that since the early part of this year, since June, our trade with European countries slowed down. So I'm a little bit worried because it might lead to the reduction of trade and investment in the end.
Yes.
So I'm very closely watching. I hope that European countries get over the Euro crisis.
Yes.
Sooner than later.
Okay. Now, people often point to European integration and contrast it with the lack of a similar apparatus in Northeast Asia. Now, with the crisis in the euro at the moment, do you think there are any lessons for Asian integration in political or economic areas from Europe?
It's very hard to answer this question, but anyhow, one point I may make clear is that a too idealistic approach sometimes backfires. So yeah, we have to keep in mind that we have to take step-by-step approach. Anyhow, when it comes to Asian integration, I see certain elements of limitations on our part. There may be two points I'd like to count. One might be the diversity in Asian region. So it means it takes us a long time to achieve the Asian version of integration like EU. And second one might be too strong nationalism in some parts of Asia. This might hamper the smooth process of integration, I'm afraid. But we have to try very hard. This year we saw certain encouraging signs. One was that in Seoul over there, in Seoul, we established a permanent secretariat for trilateral cooperation between Korea, Japan, and China. This is a permanent secretariat established. Another element if I may count is that just this year, the negotiation of Trans-Pacific Partnership gained momentum with the strong willingness to participate from the part of Japan, Canada, and Mexico. So this kind of process is quite an encouraging sign for us. But anyhow, in order to achieve the real Asian integration, we need to lessen the animosity among peoples while increase trust among peoples, and we have to encourage people to people to change in the region.
And just linked to that, I mean, you know, Britain's very fond of soccer. And
yes.
We have two of your excellent players here, Park Ji-sung and Lee Yong-pyo.
Right.
Have they helped, do you think, increase or improve perceptions of South Korea or the feelings of British people towards South Korea, do you think?
Of course, I think so. I visited several places, regions, including Manchester and Liverpool. Also watched the match between Manchester United and Bolton Wanderers, our two players are playing against each other. Anyhow, every time I meet with British sports-loving people, they think Koreans are very dedicated and hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly because of the impression the players are giving to watchers in the United Kingdom, I think.
Yeah.
So, above all, yes, they are conducting a very good sports diplomacy, and they give them an impression that Koreans are likable.
Yes.
I'm satisfied with that.
Okay, now, just to sort of round up, as the Hallyu or Korean wave continues throughout the world,
mm-hmm.
K-pop has been very popular in America now, and
yeah.
Just recently in New York City there was a huge concert with a number of Korean musicians out there.
I see.
Yes. Do you think we'll see the Hallyu spread more to to United Kingdom anytime soon, or?
Not anytime soon, because I know the British people are sometimes very conservative. But I see an encouraging sign here as well this year, because in 3rd of November, we held Korean Film Festival. Okay. On that occasion, we showed our Chinese performance as an opening gala. So I was surprised to see this packed audience,
yes,
in the theater. But I think the age group is limited,
mm-hmm,
when it comes to pop culture, Korean K-pop. So young students, students or youngsters in their early 20s.
Yeah,
most of them were, yes, quite young. So my mission is to spread.
To spread.
The K-pop to the ordinary people. And also my mission is to make it lasting one. I'll try very hard. But it takes time. In the meantime, we need to mutually exchange our cultural performances and cultural exhibitions.
And it's important. Is there much British culture being is it popular in South Korea?
Yes, of course. When it comes to pop culture, in my young days, I already knew about Cliff Richard, or Beatles, of course. So this two-way traffic is two-way important. Traffic. And now is Korea's time to be more active here in the UK.
Yes.
I'll encourage them.
Thank you very much for joining us, Ambassador. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and I appreciate you're very busy. So yeah, we're very thankful at Korean Economic Institute you could join us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I do hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can download other episodes at our podcast website, which you can find at keia.podbean.com. That's keia.podbean.com. We'd also really appreciate it if you could leave us some feedback using the comment system on our website or directly on the iTunes Korean Context page. If you'd like to suggest a candidate or topic for a future episode, then be sure to drop me an email, ocarroll@keia.org. That's ocarroll@keia.org. Thanks for tuning in, and hope to catch you next time.